you've got to make yourself attractive to, you know, potential partners mm-hmm. that are people that are leaving firms that are they're not happy with, or they're a little backward, come to you and they want to be able to see that you have a path that's going to be successful.
Welcome back, gang. Episode number 127 of Future Proof. And Happy New Year, our first show of 2021. And it's going to be a great year. I can feel it in my bones. You know, really, though, I'd just settle for better than 2020, right? I mean, it certainly can't get any worse. I'm Bill, by the way. Did I mention that? No? Well, I'm Bill. I'm your host. And I missed you. We took a couple of weeks off there for the holidays, got recharged, refreshed, ready to go for a new year. Here's hoping your year is off to a fantastic start. Glad you're here. Glad to be here. Let's start like this, like we always do, by telling you that this week's show is sponsored, as always, by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors. And unlimited customization. There's that too. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. So onward into 2021. I was looking for a great way to start the new year off by looking forward, but sort of paradoxically, I decided a better way forward actually might be to spend this first episode at least looking back a little bit. So my guest this week is Alan DeLeon. You may know Alan. You may not. If you do, you're better off for it. Alan is a founding partner of DeLeon & Stang, a firm in Gaithersburg, Maryland. He and Rich Stang started the firm way back in 1984. I was 17 at the time. Sorry about that, Alan. But more to the point for our conversation today, Alan just retired on New Year's Eve, 2020, to be exact. He's calling it a career, and what a career it's been. So I thought this would be a great opportunity to sit down and tap into the wisdom and experience of a longstanding and very, very active member of our profession, kind of to, you know, take a look back at where we've been, where we are, where we're going as a profession. We'll get to that conversation here in just a moment. First, here's what caught my eye this week. It's the forward-looking part of this week's episode. It's a survey from Accounting Today about what accounting firms of all sizes believe that 2021 has in store for them. Here's just a snapshot, okay? 24% expect their firms will grow by 10% or more this year. Some optimism there. 16% expect flat or declining growth on the pessimistic side. 46% say tax season is going to be better this year than last, and 19% say worse. 34% say, about the same. What's keeping all firms up at night? The top six answers are pandemic-related issues. No surprise there. The economic health of their clients. Number three, recruitment and retention. Four, keeping up with regulation. Five, acquiring and retaining new clients. And six, keeping up with technology. And 37% of the staff at all firms are currently full-time remote workers. Boy, that's a big change from a year ago, right? With small firms leading the way at 49%. You can check out all of the numbers in Accounting Today's article. The year ahead, 2021, in the numbers. Now, let's shift our view from, you know, the windshield to the rearview mirror here for a little bit with my guest this week, Alan DeLeon. This guy, I mean, what hasn't he done, really? One of the most active volunteers the Maryland Association of CPAs has known, served as MACPA chair in 2011-2012, named chair of the association's Legislative Executive Committee in 2011. He's been a member of the AICPA's Governing Council, the State of Maryland's Budget Task Force, the AICPA's Technical Issues Committee. He's been a member of the boards of directors of numerous community organizations in and around Gaithersburg and Maryland, and just has a really solid pulse on what's going on in the profession. And as he steps away from his day-to-day duties, I wanted to chat with him about how things have changed, right, during his career and how he sees the future playing out for the profession. Sometimes, you know, I think in order to become future-ready, we have to, you know, take a look back. Take a hard look at our past while we prepare for what's to come. And so we can learn from where we've been as we go forward, right? So that's what we're doing this week. Here is my conversation with Alan DeLeon. Alan, thanks for being here. Congratulations. This is a monumental moment for you, for those of us here at the MACPA. I'm kind of curious, what are your plans from here on out?
Well, thank you, Bill. I appreciate that. And, you know, after 36 years of, you know, running DeLeon and Stang and starting it from scratch, it feels a little strange to be retiring from, you know, my own firm. But as you know, it's been a planned succession. So what I plan to do now is I'm going to work for the firm on a consulting basis, primarily doing business development and some special projects. And then I'm going to increase my community involvement. I'm on several boards already, and I just recently joined the board of Holy Cross Hospital. So I'm going to do some board work, primarily with nonprofit organizations.
What kind of, where do your interests lie in terms of that type of community work? What do you like to focus on?
You know what, being a CPA, they always tap us to be the treasurer. So, of course, so that's the, you know, the area where I have the best contribution to make, but also fundraising, mm-hmm. helping them raise funds. And then that's, you know, through the network of folks that I know and relationships that I have.
That's great.
So it'll be those two things.
I'm not sure I've ever talked to you about this before, Alan, but where are you from originally?
Originally from New York. Grew up on Long Island.
Okay.
To Hofstra University with a degree in accounting, business administration. You know, worked in a Big Eight accounting firm in New York City, first job out of college.
No kidding. What, I mean, tell me a little bit about the decision to focus on accounting. Why that? What drew you to the profession?
Being a doctor was out of the question right off the bat. And so I kind of thought about professions, and there was, so law and CPA were the only two good ones left. And so I didn't really see myself as a lawyer. So anyway, I took some accounting courses as part of my normal, first 2 years of liberal arts classes, and I liked it, and I was fairly good at it. I was fairly sure I didn't want to be a psych major, so ended up taking accounting courses and liked it, and kind of took off from there.
The rest is history. So what brought you to Maryland from New York?
Well, after I left Big Eight, I went to a client in the Bronx, New York, in a really bad neighborhood. It was a moving company. Anyway, the controller there left and went to Washington to be the VP of Finance for the American Trucking Association.
Okay.
So, because movers are trucking companies. Uh-huh. And anyway, he called me and offered me a job as the controller for the American Trucking Association, which at that time was a pretty big nonprofit. Mm-hmm. They had about 300 employees. It was a regulated industry. Even though the Teamsters are separate, a lot of trucking companies operated with union labor. So, and we were just in, I was just engaged. We were just about to get married. We had actually talked about moving away. And I tell you, the most nervous interview I ever had was dinner with my fiance, telling her I wanted to take this job in Washington and leave right after the wedding.
Oh my gosh. Big step. And
so she said yes and yes, and off we went. So
nice.
My mother never forgave me for leaving town.
Yeah, they have a tendency to do that, don't they?
That's right.
And the firm, you mentioned the date. Is it 36 years, you said?
Yeah, so I was with the Trucking Association for 15 years, and I was the CFO when I left. I worked for Tom Donahue, who's the head of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce now for quite a number of years. Very well-connected guy in Washington. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of CPAs, I started gravitating toward doing tax returns on the side. They were mostly friends and employees of the Trucking Association. Mm-hmm. I did just about everybody's tax return there. It was back when they were by hand. You know, we did them by pencil and copied right. The forms. Anyway, it got to be, it grew up to like something like 200 tax returns. It was getting pretty high. And I had interviewed a guy named Rich Stang to be my assistant controller. And Rich was, Rich was graduating from Frostburg, and he was also captain of the rugby team. So I figured anybody could be captain of the rugby team has to have some leadership skills. So anyway, so I elicited Rich to help me with these tax returns, and but instead of just asking him to help me and paying him, we decided to form a little partnership. So that was 1984.
Wow.
We formed a partnership, and so it was part time between 84 and about 1990. And by 1990, both Rich and I wanted to go full time. And I went to the president of the ATA and I said, look, this is what I want to do. And he said, look, he says, I'll tell you what, he says, I'll pay you for a year. You come and go as you need to get your business started, but make sure nothing goes wrong around here while I look for a replacement. So he paid me for a whole year and I did both jobs. And that allowed us enough money to pay Rich. And we did a small acquisition of a firm, a Virginia firm, sort of a sole practitioner. And that was the original basis, those part-time returns and that practice that we purchased.
Wow.
And that's kind of how we got started. And some of those clients, believe it or not, from that very beginning there, are still clients today, 36 years later.
No kidding.
Kind of amazing.
That's great. And so you've gone from it was just you and Rich at the beginning. How many folks are you now at this point?
Well, we have about 50 people and three offices.
Nice. Wow.
And originally we started in my basement using some used partitions that we had got from the trucking association when they renovated. They said, well, we got these old partitions. Anybody wants them, they can have them. So we grabbed them. And we set up a little office down in my basement with these partitions. We only stayed there about 6 months, but that was, it's an interesting story because we used to pay my son 50 cents to go to the mailbox and bring the mail in.
Let's reflect back on the last 36 years or so. I mean, what's been the biggest change in the profession, do you think, that you've seen over the course of this time?
It's technology and automation. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty obvious. But I said earlier we to do the tax returns by hand, and trying to do them by hand now is just almost unthinkable. Mm-hmm. But even all throughout that time, you know, the profession was starting to get automated. You know, you had Excel spreadsheets got more sophisticated. The tax returns, we started doing them on computer. First we did batch processing and then we did them on the computer. Mm-hmm. And then you had later on, you had QuickBooks that came along, and that was amazing. I mean, and so, and then of course in the last 10 years, I think that technology has just increased tremendously.
Oh, it's exploding.
And much more rapid to point now where we have, artificial intelligence and we have data analytics, and we've got robots doing the bookkeeping.
Well, what are some of the? That explosion in technology—it's only going to accelerate. I think going forward, this is kind of an exponential curve we're on technology-wise. What do you think are some of the biggest opportunities that lie ahead for the profession, given all that that's going on?
Well, I think it's really in the consulting area, trying to help clients understand how to use the technology in their industry, and then also using the technology ourselves to help them with the basic functions that a CPA firm does. You know, they used to pay us to enter data and crunch data, and they're not going to pay us for that anymore. They're going to pay us to analyze data, and tell them what it means for their company.
Yep.
So I think that's where we're headed. And a perfect example of that is during this pandemic, we had these PPP loans. Mm-hmm. And we jumped on that right away, and we created a whole team of people to understand the CARES Act and all the nuances of that. And we made a lot of revenue helping clients understand and apply for PPP loans.
Yeah.
But there's many things like that over the years. And I think a business, even a CPA firm, has to be ready to pivot. We pivoted to remote working very, very seamlessly. You know, we're a high-tech firm, and every one of our people already had computers at home, multiple monitors, scanners, So switching to remote work for us was almost painless.
So that's a good example of you know, understanding the trends that are coming and preparing yourself for, you know, unseen eventualities, right? I mean,
that's right.
Yeah.
And you've seen it in lots of businesses, businesses that have pivoted, you know, restaurants. Some restaurants were slow to do the curbside pickup and the takeout, and others revamped their websites right away. They had it, you know, a beautiful setup where you could, you know, not only order, but you could get it exactly the way you wanted it. And it shows up at your door in 11 minutes. And, you know, the ones that did that have survived, and the ones that were slow at it, you know, didn't.
And it's almost a mindset, really, that the ones that survive and then thrive in environments like this are the ones that almost anticipate changes or trends or problems or things like that before they happen, right? They're constantly thinking, okay, well, what's next, and how do we have to adjust? And
yeah, I heard some business owner in retail saying that he thought the changes that they made in the last 3 months would have taken 10 years if they had not been forced to do it.
That's what I've been hearing, is that the pandemic has kind of served as an accelerator of sorts for almost everything, from technology to business models to everything else.
Yeah, a perfect example for us is we wanted to do virtual audits for a long time, but the clients kept saying, "Oh, we'd like you to come. We need to see your face in the office and all this." Now, no problem.
That's right. That's right.
Audits are virtual. You know, we have secure portals. They upload the data. We do the work. We have a little Zoom meeting, and much more efficient engagement.
It's going to be really interesting to see what happens on the other side of the pandemic with things like that. Whether clients are going to want to, you know, revert back to the way that they used to do it, or whether they, you know, may like this new, or whether it's a combination of sorts, kind of a mix.
Yeah, I think it's a combination, but I would say my guess is that most of this virtual stuff, about 75% of it, is going to stay. Mm-hmm. And then the rest will, you know, there'll still be, we still need human contact. You know what I mean?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Yeah. It's
is just dying for some human contact.
Yep.
So
yep.
I just don't think that's going to go away.
Right. Right. No, I don't think so either. Mm-hmm. Which brings up another good question. I mean, you know, given the trends in technology that have been changing the profession over time, and the pandemic and the changes that has brought to the way that we work. I mean, what does the CPA of tomorrow kind of look like to you? In your mind, what do you see when you?
Yeah, I think it's a more rounded person than what you saw in the past. Because in the past, you know, you were either a CPA in public practice and you stayed in those lanes, or you were a CPA in business or government, you know, and you focused on, you know, the organization you worked for. But now I see much more rounded CPAs, and even other professionals that aren't CPAs that have other credentials. That, you know, people that can handle data, you know, people that are really good with IT and security. Mm-hmm. The cybersecurity is still a big issue.
Huge.
We're thinking about, even a firm of our size, we're thinking about some kind of an arrangement or subsidiary that would offer IT and cyber services to our clients.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But really, what they want to know is, what do we think? And we'll help them, you know, achieve their goals, whatever they are. They'll grow their business and be successful.
Yep.
And they want somebody that they can pick up the phone and call or meet with and say, you know, hey, you're my business partner here. Help me.
That trusted advisor, so to speak.
Exactly. I think that is even more important than it was before.
Yep. Yep. Tell me a little bit. I mean, succession is another huge issue in the profession. Everyone's mm-hmm. talking about it. Everyone's trying to figure out, you know, what do we do when I want to leave? And here you are ready to go. And yet you and your team there at the firm have been planning this for a while to make this as seamless of a transition as possible. So I guess my question is, what kind of advice would you give to folks who are just starting to think, all right, how do I ensure, you know, the stability of my firm going forward when I decide to leave?
Yeah, well, it depends a little bit on the nature of your practice, you know, because CPAs that have a real specialty practice are going to have a harder time with a succession. Than ones that, you know, are more, you know, more general. Mm-hmm. But for us, you know, we got plenty of offers from the big firms to sell or merge in with them. And from a financial standpoint, the really wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. We thought we could do better on our own. And more importantly, we now become part of their culture. So mm-hmm. our culture inevitably, you know, gets lost.
Right.
And we really wanted to retain that. We think we have something special to offer that resonates with clients, and we don't want to lose that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I would say to a CPA firm owner that if you're going to, if you're thinking about retiring in the next 5 to 10 years, you've got to decide which way you want to go. And if you want to merge or sell with a big firm, then you got to do some things to try to make yourself attractive to that firm. Because let's face it, they're big, they're large, they're automated, they have systems, they use technology. And so you got to look attractive to them if that's the, you know, the way you want to go. And there's plenty of M&A work out there right now. You know?
Right.
Or the other way is, hey, we think we can survive on our own and do a succession like Leon and Stang is doing. And there again, you've got to make yourself attractive to, you know, potential partners mm-hmm. that are people that are leaving firms they're not happy with, or they're a little backward, come to you and they want to be able to see that you have a path that's going to be successful.
Yep.
So tell me, you got to work on firm improvement. Firm improvement. And I'm still amazed these days. So many firms are still, you know, what I would consider in the dark ages. You know, they spend all their time working on client work, and they spend no time working on the firm.
Working on the business. Yeah. 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 That's critical, I think, at this point.
I mean, you know that from the EOS stuff that we've done together. So when we made the succession plan decision, we also made a big decision to spend a lot more time and effort on improving the firm.
Yep.
Not just from a financial standpoint, but from a process and systems standpoint.
Tell me a little bit about the culture. You had mentioned how special you think your culture is and what a key part of the firm it is. Tell me, what is it about that culture that you really wanted to hold on to? Describe it for me.
Well, we call it the DNS way. Mm-hmm. And everybody in the firm has got one of these, you know, little plaques or signs in their office that describe the DNS way. And so they all buy into it. They all they helped us develop it. You know, as a result of them helping us develop it, they also, you know, buy into it.
And it's so tell me what the DNS way is. Describe what some of that culture looks like internally.
So it kind of starts with our mission statement, which is improving the lives of our clients, our staff, and our community with innovation, trust, and integrity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we've had this similar mission statement for a number of years. It's kind of refined it a little bit over the years, broader than it used to be. You know, it used to be improving the financial lives, and now it's just improving the lives. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it relates to the clients, what we call wow service, making sure that we're a 9 or a 10 on their list when they have an interaction with us. And It doesn't matter who they're dealing with, whether they're dealing with the receptionist or they're dealing with the partner or anybody in between. So we've done training with our people on it. Everybody knows what it is. As I said, we have a, you know, we have a little plaque that we, everybody has it in their office. You know, it's part of our culture. And what's nice about it is the employees helped us develop it. So they bought into it right away because, you know, it was really theirs.
And I love the way that you've included community into that culture, as opposed to just, you know, your staff and your clients, but it's also about, you know, improving the community in which you reside, which I think speaks to your point about, you know, getting bought up by a huge firm, that kind of goes away, right? But here you're still serving the community in which you guys reside.
And yeah, no, absolutely. We do a lot of community stuff. Matter of fact, in conjunction with my retirement, we've announced that we're starting the Leon and Stang Foundation.
Oh, nice.
And we're going to make a contribution annually to that in the name of each retiring partner. And we're going to, employees can contribute to it. But we do a lot of other, you know, community involvement thing. And most of them are things employees, you know, come to us and they say that we want to do this 10K run. We want to do this, you know, walk for breast cancer. And if you look at our website, you'll see there's a whole list of stuff that we've done. Most recently, we did, there's a creek in Frederick right near our office called Carroll Creek. Mm-hmm. In the wintertime, the Frederick Business Partnership lets firms put boats in the middle of the creek with lights on them. Mm-hmm. And each boat is for a different nonprofit organization. So we did that this year, and we'll do that now every year. So it was kind of cool. People were, you know, helping us build a boat and paint it, and we launched it. And now if you go on our website or go on the Frederick Business Partnership website, you can make a contribution.
That's fantastic.
The community is a big piece of it.
And on a related note, Alan, you've been incredibly active as a volunteer for the MACPA and the profession, particularly legislatively. I'm interested. What drew you to that type of work? Why is that important?
You know, at the beginning, I was scared to death. Really didn't know what I was doing. But you know, the more you get involved in what's going on, you see things that aren't right, or you see things you'd like to see changed or be better. And it goes back to, you know, my childhood. My dad was the mayor of our little town.
I'm not kidding.
A town of about maybe 25,000 people. And he was on the city council, and then he was mayor, and he was on the zoning board, and why he did that, I don't know. And whether that had any impact on me, I have no idea. You know, I started getting involved in MACPA's legislative committee. I think Terry Hancock, I believe, was the chairman at the time. I was the assistant chairman, which meant I had no responsibilities whatsoever. you know, one thing led to another, and now I'm sort of the wise old sage guy that's on his way out and going to be grooming some new people. It's been fun going to Annapolis, talking to legislators, helping them understand the impact of legislation that they're considering, telling them the legislation that they should be considering. It's mostly directed from a business standpoint. So I found a lot of the legislators really are not business people at all. And right. Many of them don't understand, you know, they look at a piece of legislation, they think it's going to do one thing, but they don't realize that it also does three other things that they don't want.
What are some of the consequences that they haven't considered, right?
Yeah. Right. And when you explain that to them, they're like, oh, wow, man, I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. So the politics part about it, you know, I really like that. And this has certainly been a crazy several years of intense politics in this country. And I'm hoping things will, you know, will calm down after the pandemic and we have a change in administrations now. You know, I'm really a conservative person, so I like to see government involved, you know, little as possible. But there are some things government needs to do. And this pandemic, it wasn't anybody's fault. And the government has to help the citizens and the business. They can't just let us, sink or swim.
Indeed. And I was speaking with Senator Brian Feldman, Maryland senator, too long ago. And he made the point, and this was before the pandemic, but we were talking about kind of this hyper-partisan environment that we're all living in right now. And he said, that's happening at the federal level, definitely. But there's very little that goes on legislatively at the federal level that has a real tangible impact on the day-to-day lives of ordinary citizens, right? Most of the stuff that impacts them legislatively happens at the state or local level. And that's where a lot of your work has resided, is working with Tom Hood and the profession in Annapolis. So talk a little bit about that. That kind of stuck with me. Everyone's talking about what's going on in Washington, but really when you get down to it, the stuff that has an impact on our day-to-day lives is the stuff that's happening, in state houses around the country, right?
Yeah, and I think every state is different, of course, depending on where they're located and what's going on in their state. You could take a state like Arizona, where immigration is a huge issue for them.
Sure.
And you come to Maryland, and we've got different issues. We have a lot of federal employees here, and our economy is driven to a large extent by tourism and by the federal government. I think it does vary a lot, by state to state. But you're right. The state legislatures have an important job, and I think they need to focus on what's happening with their, with their own citizens.
Sure.
And try to do the best they can. And sometimes things in the federal government do have an impact, so they have to give that some consideration.
Yep.
This whole issue with taxation, state taxation has now become a big issue. You've got some big high tax states that, they're likely to see some fallout from this this issue, and people moving out of state and moving to states where they feel like the tax burden is less.
And
Maryland is not an inexpensive state.
Right.
Now we're not hearing that here, which is good. But there's a federal issue that could impact us at some point.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you talk about the pandemic and how that's kind of trickled down to impacting state legislation. Certainly, I mean, states like Maryland is certainly not unique in this area, but they're suffering budget shortfalls because of the pandemic, right? And how are they going to make that money up? And then you talk about raising taxes in different areas or other ways of raising revenue, and that falls right into the wheelhouse of CPAs, and so it becomes even more important for
folks. I know. I'm sure sales tax revenue is way down, I think, and they're probably income tax revenue will be down for those businesses that have lost money.
Right.
Healthcare is a big issue in our state, as it is probably almost everywhere. That's going to be a hotly debated topic coming up here. We need to provide health care for all our people. And, the question is, how do you do it, and who pays for it?
Right.
I for one would like to see us sit down and talk about these issues with real facts and, without, political motivations. And if we do that, we can solve these problems.
Right. Right. And that's
so far the last few years, the Congress hasn't shown a lot of interest in doing that.
That's a tough nut to crack.
What I would say about Maryland, though, and then I think Senator Feldman would agree with me, Maryland operates on a much more of a bipartisan basis than the federal government does. And I suspect that a lot of state legislatures are like that. But at least in Maryland, we do have a Republican governor, but we have a primarily Democratic House and Senate, but yet for the most part, they work together and try to, come up with the right answer.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
That's nice to see. Switching gears here real quick, Alan, I'm kind of curious, after all your years in the profession and the experience and everything you've seen, what kind of advice would you give to a young CPA who's just kind of getting started? I mean, what would you say to them?
Well, getting your CPA certificate still, to me, is number one. Mm-hmm. You know, I get the question a lot, should I get an MBA? Should I, get some other certification? And to me, the CPA is still the gold standard.
Yep.
And if you want to get some other things after that, I think that's great. And matter of fact, some of these other credentials are really important. I've got several of them myself. But getting that CPA is kind of critical. And you've got to be able to embrace technology, and not just now, but, you know, what it's going to look like in the future. And then you've got to decide, do you want to start out in public accounting where you're providing services to a group of clients, or do you think you'll be happier going to industry or into the public, the nonprofit or education sectors and work for one organization? Mm-hmm. And I've done both. So there's a lot of rewards, in both areas.
Yep.
So that's sort of a personal preference. And then I would say two things. Get involved in your local association. Like Maryland has been unbelievable, resource for me and for us. And I can't believe it took me so many years to really get involved. Because there were many years I was focusing just on my career and what I was doing. And I didn't really, get involved in the profession. And I also didn't understand the value of relationships and networking. Hmm. And I do now. Obviously, I've done that now for quite a number of years. But when I was 25, I wasn't thinking about that.
I forget who was it that said this to me. It was it might have been Dan Burrs, as a matter of fact. But it's kind of stuck with me. The great phrase guy. Is your network is your net worth.
Yep.
I think there's a lot of truth in that.
We have that sign hanging in our office. But so, absolutely, that network of people and relationships, people your own age, people you went to college with, people that you're friendly with, or develop the relationships with those people, develop the trust level. And when they own their own businesses and when they have opportunities to need your services, they will come to you. You won't have to go knocking on the door.
Yep, yep. So some consulting work for you, some community service. What else is on your plate now that you're entering the world of retirement? What's next for you?
Well, golf. I love to play golf, so I'm going to be doing some more of that. And grandkitties.
How many do you have now?
I got one. I got three now, one on the way, so it'll be four.
Congratulations.
Soon. So, yeah, that's excited about that. Financial planning has always been an area that I've spent some time on. I have a credential in that area. I have a special expertise in deferred compensation plans. Mm-hmm. So I most likely will do some work in the financial planning area. As you know, DeLeon Stang has an investment advisory firm, and I could work with them. Mm-hmm. I have an opportunity to work with them, or I could do that on my own.
Well, whatever you decide to do, Alan, enjoy it. Congratulations. And thanks for your years of service to the profession and to our association, certainly. We appreciate you, and I wish you nothing but the best. Thanks for being here.
Great. Thank you, Bill.
Okay. So with all that said, is there anything that I didn't ask that I should have, or anything you want to add that we didn't talk about?
I think we covered it. I think we covered it pretty good.
Okay.
You and Tom and the rest of the MECPA have been amazing.
Well,
for us. So
it's been a pleasure working with you.
And pay my dues for the rest of my life. Okay, I can't hold a pen anymore.
That's awesome. So yeah, and so just as a follow up, again, if you could send me that history document that you were talking about.
Yep.
The timeline and then a photo. and we'll take it from there.
Okay, that's great.
Thank you so much. Have a great afternoon.
All right, appreciate your time. Enjoy it.
Take care, Alan. Bye.
Bye.
Great stuff there this week from Alan Dillion, founding partner of Dillion & Stang in Gaithersburg, Maryland. You can find out more at dillionandstang.com. That's D-E-L-E-O-N and Stang, S-T-A-N-G.com. Also, please don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. And we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering these future-ready skills now, right now, by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that is it. We're off and flying in 2021. Folks, have a great week. We'll talk to you again next week.